Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And
interesting topic we're going to talk about.
It is. I'm fascinated by this. And it's you know, we saw them last year. The question is, how many of you have those little diamond-shaped...
Look like they have armor.
They have armor. All over your window screens, in your house.
In your house, walking
over. In your car. Or maybe you're a farmer, and they're in your corn crop, and they're in your fruit. But just think about it. They're really... I mean, Valerie and I spent last weekend... I don't know. We killed maybe, I'm prone to exaggeration, maybe hundreds, maybe.
You think you really killed a hundred?
It just, I can't stand them. They remind me of a little nasty, even though not roaches.
Somebody loves them.
You think so?
No, I think I'm pushing it there.
We know a lot of you have written about this one.
Almost
talk about
definitely.
It. 410-319-8888. We're going to talk in the last part of the show with Dr. Michael Raup. Who is professor of entomology at the University of Maryland College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. And Dr. Michael, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yeah, Mark, that's good. Dr. Raup, that's right. But, guys, I can't believe you're killing these things.
What do you mean?
What in the world would we do?
These are one of Mother Nature's most profound creations here. Are you kidding me? These things are awesome.
Oh, I spoke like a true entomologist.
You got to go, didn't it, gentlemen?
No, my brother-in-law is an entomologist as well. So my wife's brother. So I mean, and he, you know,
we're not going to hold that against him now, Mark. Are we?
No, I love the man. He's a good guy. But
off on the wrong foot here, are we?
So tell me why you love these.
Stink bugs.
I don't really. These are despicable, frankly. I love many bugs, but I'm afraid that the stink bugs are not on the list of my bug loves here. These guys, a lot of bugs are my friends, frankly. I love the cicadas. Those guys are dynamite.
I like cicadas, too.
You got to love a praying mantis and a ladybird beetle, but frankly, these guys stink.
Now, I've been a bug boy all my life. I'm an amateur entomologist. I have been when I was a little boy, collected everything I could find.
Super.
But these are an invasive species. Let's talk about what these things are, where they came from, how they got here.
Yeah. It's a good place to start with it. We don't really know how they got here exactly. We're guessing, like many invasives that we've seen over the past 15 or 20 years, they probably came in with a shipment of goods. We're reasonably certain, actually, we know for a fact that they came out of Asia somewhere. Now, of all places, these guys wound up in Amish country over near Allentown, Pennsylvania. Don't ask me how. It's easy to understand how something could come through New York City or the port of Baltimore. But frankly, they did land. That's the first place they were discovered. And actually, you know, the thing that's curious, gentlemen, is it was actually homeowners who complained about this thing first back in the late 1990s. Finally, in the year 2001, we were able to positively identify this as the Haliomorpha halis, the brown marmorated stink bug. And we thought at first it was simply going to be a nuisance pest because it came into people's homes in the autumn and, you know, caused a little bit of consternation in that regard. But over the past 2 years, we found that this guy is a crusher. This, my colleague down here at College Park, who works with our farmers, I work primarily with consumers and homeowners, he said that this is the worst pest he has seen in 40 years. I'm calling it a perfect pest because kind of in the same vein as the perfect storm, because this thing feeds on corn, it feeds on soybeans, it feeds on tomatoes, it feeds on peppers, it gets in vineyards, it feeds on shade trees, it feeds on stone fruit. It is just crushing our apple growers, our peach growers, nectarines, and then when it's done with all of that, guess where it's coming next? It's coming to your house.
Which they are my house already.
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, so
this is crazy bad pest.
I want to talk about how what people can do to get rid of them in their homes, but also what this means and what we do. And I think that actually we have an interesting caller just called in at 410-319-8888. If you want to talk about this in your own community, at your own farm, in your own suburban neighborhood, in your own home, and what to do about it, we found vinegar is the way to kill them. We just throw them in jars of vinegar and pull them off the walls and
throw
them
in. Mark, I've got a very curious story about this. You know, we've talked about the stink bug, and by golly, they do stink.
They do stink.
They contain in their defensive secretion, that's the stink, a compound called trans-2-decanol and another compound called trans-2-octanol. Now, I don't expect you guys necessarily to know what these things are right off the bat, but I had an interesting call from a homeowner who said, you know, these things smell familiar to me. And I said, yeah, you know, I can't put my finger or my nose on it, but they do smell familiar. He was a former chemist. He's retired now. And I said, look, I said, these things contain trans-2-decanol. He went to the Internet and he said, hey, guess what? Cilantro has the same component. Now, Mark, you're telling me that you're putting them in vinegar. I'm telling you they release something that smells like cilantro. Hey, we're halfway to salsa here, guys. Maybe we can do
maybe in your house. We make our own salsa, or at least hope to, with fish peppers and our homegrown tomatoes. But I don't know about the bugs. But what we have on the phone with us is Congressman Roscoe Bartlett from the 8th District of Maryland.
Fantastic.
He just called in, who represents a district full of orchards.
Sure.
He's also has been the congressman who represents my district, which is full of orchards. And
he's our hero right now. Roscoe is hauling the political freight for us. So please, if Roscoe's on, I'd love to hear what he has to say.
Roscoe Bartlett, welcome. Good to have you with us.
I'm happy to be on. And what I just listened into is exactly right. You know, if I was a mad scientist and I was splicing genes together to produce a bug that was going to be the thing that terrorists would want to use to really hurt us, I probably couldn't have done a better job.
You hit the nail on the head, sir. I agree with you.
Yeah, there had never been a bug like this. It eats all season long, about 180 days it eats. It eats almost anything. And you can't kill it with the ordinary residuals because it doesn't eat from the surface. It sticks a little proboscis, we call it, a little hypodermic thing, needle-like thing, down inside and sucks out from the inside. If that's all he did and went away, we'd hardly notice he'd been there, but he leaves some saliva there. And these fruits and vegetables and whatever, they react very badly to that bit of saliva he leaves there. A little knot grows in there, and then it gets rotten around it. And the fruit is perfectly good to eat. You just need to cut that out. They can't do that commercially, so if there's many of these on it, it is a total loss. They can't even use it for juice or applesauce or anything like that. But you can use it in your home, you know. You can cut out things when you're making your pies that they can't afford to do commercially. And when I eat them, if there's a little spot there, I just take it out with my teeth, and then I discard it, and I eat the rest of the apple. It's really not harmful if you ate it. It's kind of disgusting and you don't want to eat it, but it's not harmful if you eat the thing. But this, you know, I was introduced to this thing early this month. It's incredible. The president of the American Apple Growers about 3 weeks ago didn't even know that this was a problem. And now 100% of the late apples in some of the orchards are gone. They you know, they've been attacked by this insect and they can no longer, they're not perfect. And I tell you, unless we can get a handle on this next year, and I'm kind of uncertain whether we can do that or not, I think there's going to be a lot of damage. You just got to get used to eating these things with some damage. You know, the rest of it is perfectly good. 99% of it is perfectly good, and most of the fruits, not more than 1% of it is damaged. Why would you throw away 99% because 1% of it is damaged?
Well, let me ask both of you this question. This is, and I think, and folks, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. I know many of your homes are inundated with these things. Ours is, especially in the sunlight. They seem to like sunlight more than dampness. They hide in the dampness but are out in the warm weather. Is that right, Michael, up there? I mean, that's what they...
Yeah, you know, they're, Mark, they're very, very active in sunlight, like most other insects. Well, all other insects, these babies are cold-blooded, so they rely on temperature. So the warmer it gets, the more active they can be. In cooler weather, and that's what they're doing right now, basically, is seeking refuge inside of people's homes for the cold weather. So in the cold weather, they're going to become dormant. But in the on these hot summer days, these guys have been flying out of soybean fields into orchards like F-14. So they've been very active, and you will see them more active on the sunny sides of your house. Absolutely.
So, but the two questions I have that are very serious about this, they came in obviously in some kind of some particles that came over when they were brought in as a box or whatever they came through.
Yeah. So they hitchhiked in. They're fantastic hitchhikers. One of my staffers saw them on the back of a Greyhound bus. sure. Like 65 miles an hour down the road, they're still on the back of the Greyhound bus. They're great hitchhikers.
We've had reports of this thing, and again, one of the reasons it spread so quickly is, as Roscoe said, these guys are fantastic. We've had reports of people from Pennsylvania climbing in an RV for a camping trip, driving to the Smoky Mountains or out west, opening the door, and out pop, you know, a half dozen stink bugs. So they're going to move very, very quickly.
Well, let me ask this question.
Go ahead, Mark.
This is then we're going to go to the phones and Linya, their first caller up. I want to get these callers in here.
Sure, of course.
But I one of the things that I learned, and I won't use names here, but I and this is really disturbing that we got a there was a entomologist who several years back in 2005 or so said that this would be a very dangerous invasive species, but the agriculture department didn't pay attention to him. This was going to be a bug that could attack our crops.
Well, that's true, and as I said, our agronomist here, our very famous and distinguished Dr. Dively, who's been working for field crops forever, when we saw this coming, you know, I think we recognized that this was going to be a serious major threat. It was not just going to be a nuisance. So, you know, it really unfortunately has come to fruition now. And I think it took a lot of people by surprise. But, you know, I picked up my first one in Howard County in 2005, and that's when I put it on my website. And I said, guys, you know, there's a storm of brewing here. And
is it true that they carry that?
I think everybody's on board now. The important thing, I think, is everybody's pulling in the same direction, and there's an enormous amount of energy. Right now, what we have to do is find the resources to put the scientists to work and try to find the solution to this rascal.
Yeah, our best solution is probably finding a pheromone to which it is strongly attracted and then attract it and kill it, the way we do Japanese beetles. I don't know if there is such a pheromone for this thing. You know, when I first saw it, you know, probably because I'm a scientist and a farmer, you know, I saw immediately that this could produce a plague of truly biblical proportions. A guy that eats everything for about 6 months long, that flies. The only
six
way to kill
long.
Him is to kill him and all the good guys with him. And then you've got to do it again 3 days later because you're going to fly in from the woods and the alfalfa field. I don't know if they eat alfalfa, but from the soybean field and the corn field next to your orchard. You know, this guy, it's really, really quite horrendous.
But
you
now,
Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here for
a second. Go ahead, Michael Ralph.
Michael makes a great point here. We've really made enormous progress in the past three decades developing what we call integrated pest management. And what this has meant for our industries is enormous savings in terms of pesticide use, safer pesticide use, and incredible benefits in terms of reducing the use of pesticides in all kinds of commodities. When this stink bug arrived, it basically reversed three decades of progress. So now there are growers have been forced to produce a marketable product. They've had to use many, many pesticide sprays, the likes of which we haven't seen for three decades. So this has turned back this single organism, this single bug in crops like our orchard crops has turned back the progress we've made over three decades in one season.
And this is only a very short-term solution because he will mutate. There will be mutants, just like fly mutants are now totally immune to DDT. There will be mutants of this guy that are not killed by these harsh insecticides. Then what do we do? You've got to turn to natural controls. There is a parasitic wasp that parasitizes the eggs. It's in quarantine in New York. I have no idea how soon we can turn them loose. But we're going to have to take, what, years to see that it's not going to decimate something else in our ecology. Who knows what else it might kill if we turn it loose?
Oh, my God. So let me on the phone, Gina, have some questions from our listeners, and I have another thought, a question about what this might mean. Because this is really, it really is, I mean, I was just been shocked by the growth of these things. Very, very quick question, Michael Rupp, then Linda Marie, I want to get them on. But
sure.
Is it my understanding that each casing, when they lay the eggs, is 500 eggs in the casing? Is that what someone told me?
No, I don't. I don't think it's that quite high. There's variability. The trick here with these rascals is they can lay multiple egg cases each year, so they vary in number. It's not nearly that high, but they can lay dozens to, oh, perhaps as many as 30 or 40. But the problem here is they don't do just one. They can lay several. They can and they will lay several egg masses every single year. So this puts the fecundity from a single female brown marmorated stink bug probably well over 1,000 if it can survive its entire lifetime.
Well, I would think so. They have a huge biotic potential. The biotic potential of the housefly, for instance, if you killed none of them, and they all survived in one season, they would cover Germany 6 feet deep with flies. And I suspect this chat may have about the biotic potential of the housefly.
Oh, Lord have mercy. 410-319-8880. We're talking about stink bugs. We were lucky to have Congressman Roscoe Bartlett call in. Appreciate his listening. And Dr. Michael Raup, who is professor of entomology at the University of Maryland College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. And Lynn, you're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, then we can.
Yes, I'm calling. This sounds like a state of emergency, really. I'm coming off of several years of battling cicada killers, which are also a resilient pest, but we have quite a few in our home. And my question, they're accumulating in our palladium window, which is in the sun most of the day, and I was curious as to whether they can cause any property damage. Do they eat wood? Do they get into drywall, carpeting, that nature? And then the second question is, I have a small dog who has managed to pick up a few and eat them, and I didn't know if they were harmful to pets. So I'll hang up and listen to your response.
Sure, good question. Michael Raup, you want to take that first?
Sure. Yeah, let me run with this one for a minute. Yeah, the upside here is they're not known to. I've never heard of any. I've handled hundreds of these things, never been bitten. I don't believe they bite animals or people, so you don't have to worry on that score. If your dog eats them, I don't particularly perceive a problem with this either. Kind of curious that they can muscle their way through that nasty defensive secretion, but hey, dogs do funny things.
My dog eats worse, but
in terms of home damage, no, absolutely not. They're not going to damage the home. They will not reproduce inside your home. They are simply coming in this time of year to find shelter. Normally, back in their native range, they'd find a large cliff face. Let's say they'd find a craggy outcropping. They'd find a crevice. They would aggregate, move into that crevice, and chill down. But guess what? In Baltimore County, there aren't a lot of rocky crag faces anymore, but there are a lot of big white houses. So they say, oh, baby, that's where I'm going to spend the winter. They don't come inside to get warm. They come inside to chill out and basically enter a torpor or a hibernation-like state for the course of the winter.
So how do we get rid of them during the winter? Let's say they are in our attic.
Okay, number one, and I think this is just good advice for all our listeners today. Number one, anything that's good for energy conservation in your house is going to help you with brown marmorated stink bug. That means weather stripping, caulking, door sweeps, the rubber gasket in the garage, get up into your attic with window gauge screening, put it against your gable end vents, you know, the vents on the ends of your house where the whole house fin is. Block those off with screening. Get up where your soffits are. Screen your soffits. And if you have a ridge vent, put window grade screening inside that ridge vent. This will help keep these guys out.
Huh.
Okay, so anything good for energy conservation is going to help keep them out. Once they're inside, we don't want people getting pesticides and squirting pesticides on this thing. Let's think that through.
Vacuum them up. That's what my wife does. It works great.
That's what I do, too.
You got stink bugs in the window. You squirt them with poison. What are you going to do next? You're either going to have to pick them up or vacuum them up, and now they're laden with poison. You don't want to be doing this around children or kids. Simply get out that vacuum, as Roscoe said. Vacuum those babies up and take that stinky vacuum bag and treat it with extreme prejudice. I don't care what you do with it. You can burn it, dance on it, put it in the garbage, get rid of it. But that's the best way to solve this.
Let me, before we turn back to the Congressman, Marie in Baltimore, you're on the air. Question?
Just a comment. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Listen, you know, people have mentioned about global warming, and there's some people believe and some people don't. But what I heard about a year ago, that if we continue having global warming, which I believe we do have, that we would have an increase in insects. And we can see that now with the stink bugs and the bed bugs. So what's the next bug coming along?
Roscoe Bartlett?
Well, I think that Heliomorphus hollis does like warmer climes because the first ones were found in Allentown, Pennsylvania. That is not where they are most concentrated. If you look at where they're most concentrated, where they've done best, it's somewhat south of that. So I think that they like warmer climes. It doesn't mean that they can't produce other places, because we now have found them in Maine, in Florida, in California, in Oregon, in Washington. They're fantastic hitchhikers. Only time will tell whether they're going to really take root and grow in those places. But boy, where they are here in Mid-Atlantic, they really, really have grown. And, you know, I don't know what next year will bring. You know, maybe some change in the climate and we won't have as many. I don't think, no, that's a hope, but I don't think it's going to happen, because they can live in so many different places. They eat so many different things. We have a choice, and you've talked about it a little. We have two choices. One is to really destroy what we spent several decades in building, this balance in nature, by using these harsh insecticides. The other choice is simply to accept the damage, to pay the farmers for the damage, to eat the fruit with the bites on them, and do the long-term solution. I don't know how much we're going to set back what we spent decades doing if we just turn out and spray. I suspect that's what we're going to do, though, because I think economics will kind of demand it.
But if the sprays don't work, why would we do that?
If what?
If the sprays don't work and they also just hurt the environment.
Well, they will temporarily work, you know, and he's going to have to spray about every 3 days in his orchard, because they fly in from other places, the eggs hatch and the young come out, and the young eat too. These aren't like other insects that have little worms and they pupate and so forth. This guy eats for 6 months, he and his youngsters, and they pretty much look alike. The tiny ones that come out, they're called N-stars. They look a little bit like a tick, but they're not an arachnid. They have 6 legs rather than the 8 legs of the tick. And then they shed their exoskeleton 5 different times, I think, before they become an adult.
So we have about 30 seconds left, Michael Rapp. Would you like to close out here for the last 30 seconds?
Yeah, I think this is the point about the global warming. It's a combination of both the increased trade that we've experienced. So we know absolutely now that we're in an exponential growth phase in terms of new invasive pests arriving at our shores. So I unfortunately, this is something we're going to have to address at a much grander scale than the scale we've discussed here today. We do have chemicals we can use to control these things, but as Roscoe said, the chemical fix is a temporary solution. What we're going to have to do now is try to find a way to restore the natural balance to these things one way or another, perhaps through the importation of parasitic wasps or through a combination of clever controls like attracting and killing these things. So we've got a lot of work to do. That's what the scientists know right now. A lot of work needs to be done.
We are out of time. I'm going to thank first Congressman Roscoe Bartlett. Thank you so much for listening in and calling in. We really appreciate this.
Happy to be on. Thank you very much.
Dr. Michael Rapp, entomologist, University of Maryland College of Agriculture. Thank you so much for being with us as well.
It was my pleasure, guys. Good luck out there.
Thank you both. And thank you for all the information you've given us. Anthony McCarthy, thanks for being with me on Monday.
Great to be with you every Monday, Mark.
Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, green and sustainable products. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered today by Brian Boone, who will be with us next Saturday in Washington, D.C. Our interns are Shari Barnes and Duke Lee. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews and information on all of our guests and topics, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.